Thank you. Be seated.
Court is now ready to hear argument from petitioner in FDIC versus Nueces County and Robstown ISD.
May it please the court, Mr. Lawrence Richmond will present argument from petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning. This case involves the interpretation of a federal statute, 12 U.S.C. section 1825b2. That statute provides that no property of the FDIC shall be subject to foreclosure or sale without the consent of the corporation. This case arose when the taxing authorities attempted to foreclose their tax liens on property in which the FDIC also held a mortgage lien as a receiver for a failed bank. The FDIC contended that Section 1825b2 required that its lien interest be protected from the effects of the foreclosure. The trial court agreed. However, the Court of Appeals, although finding the appeal moot, nevertheless ruled in direct conflict with another decision of another Court of Appeals in San Antonio that the FDIC's lien should not be protected. We are here today on two points of error. Number one, whether the appeal in the case has been mooted and therefore needs to be dismissed. Secondly, on the merits, whether or not this federal statute does indeed require protection of the FDIC's interest. The Court of Appeals, as I mentioned, found this appeal moot, but decided to consider the merits anyway under what it described as a new exception to the mootness doctrine recently articulated by the Court of Appeals here in Austin. We believe that the Court of Appeals erred in two respects. Number one, regardless of whether the traditional exception to the mootness doctrine or this new rule is applied, this case is nevertheless moot. Second, on the merits, the Fifth Circuit, United States Court of Appeals, has now ruled twice in the Matagorda and Donna decisions that the FDIC's lien interest must be protected in these circumstances and has dealt with every argument raised by the taxing authorities in this case.
Doesn't that tend to undermine the argument that this type of suit cannot be effectively reviewed on appeal?
Your Honor, I believe it demolishes the argument. I think the basis of this Court's ruling in the General Land Office case that the mootness exception should not be applied is that there were pending two other matters in which could be resolved. This case is not evading review. It's been reviewed to finality three times, once in Bankers, twice in Matagorda and Donna. So we don't think that any exception to the mootness case applies here.
And the Court of Appeals in this case, in essence, created a conflict in the Texas state courts with the Bankard case in this case, and also a conflict with the Fifth Circuit on this question of federal law.
That's correct, Ron. And we think that's really unfortunate because the law is now settled in the Fifth Circuit and thus in Texas federal courts. There's still, with this decision out there, there remains the possibility of some conflict in the Texas law, which we think should be eliminated by making this decision go away. And we think that'll help everybody's interest by putting this question to rest, which, as we have conceded, has a tendency to come up over and over again. As far as the merits are concerned, should the courts reach those, I think the key point there is simply the question of whether or not a lien interest is a property interest as used in this federal statute. Matagorda directly addressed that question, thoroughly analyzed it, found that federal law governs, the federal law is well settled that a lien interest is property and therefore needs to be protected. The only basis that the Court of Appeals raised below was the Birdville decision, which is a decision of the federal district court saying that a lien interest is not property. That's since been wiped out by Matagorda, so there really remains no basis. As far as the constitutional question is concerned, again, we think that's been settled by Matagorda. In that case, the Fifth Circuit said that in certain circumstances, a particularly long delay might constitute a taking. In Matagorda, however, the delay was some 27 months between the time the FDIC was appointed and the judgment on the lien was granted. In this case, the delay was 18 months, so it was well within the limitations set forth by the Fifth Circuit. So we think that the case, we really believe the case is moot, ought to be dismissed on that basis, although we have no disagreement with the taxing authority's contention that their judgment against Whitley ought to remain. We don't think that was ever really even on appeal, and we don't see why mooting of the dispute between the taxing authorities and the FDIC should have any effect on that matter. If there are no other...
Could you explain, once the FDIC forecloses on this lien, are the is the taxing authority's lien protected, or is it...
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor.
Could you taxing authorities sort of explain that?
Taxing authority's lien is always superior to ours. We recognize that fact. Once we foreclose, it simply means that it's absolutely undisputed that they cannot enforce their lien without our consent. And what generally happens is the FDIC will sell the property or will consent at some point to allow the foreclosure. The tax liens will always come first and will always be paid sooner or later. If there is nothing left in the property, if there's insufficient value to cover both the tax lien and the FDIC's lien, our lien will be rendered valueless. The tax lien always comes first and is always paid to the extent of the value of the property.
So is there any prejudice, potential prejudice, to the taxing authority?
Only in the delay. That is the
diminution of value of the property, perhaps? Is that the only...
That's a possibility, although we don't think that's real prejudice to the taxing authority because they're ahead of us. So if the property goes down, yes, it's conceivable that they, while we're holding it, there could be some diminution in value. But I think the Fifth Circuit looked at that pretty closely and said that that kind of diminution is not, doesn't amount to a taking.
You have an incentive to maximize your recovery,
absolutely.
I presume.
Yes, we do, Your Honor. And I think one of the difficulties that we ran into in the late 1980s was there was such a large volume of properties that the FDIC had to work its way through. I think that's improving now as we are getting over the hump of this crisis and the properties are moving more quickly. In this case, all of the taxes have been paid. There are no longer any delinquent taxes. If there are no other questions, I'll reserve, or should anything come up on the bottom.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Kent Ryder will present argument for respondents.
May it please the court, this case presents an interesting bridge between the case you just heard and the case that's next on your calendar. You may have noticed in this case there's no real dispute between the parties as to the facts and there's no acrimony between counsel. In your next case, as I understand it, you've got a question coming to you being certified from the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit where the federal court is asking you to give it some instructions on federal law. In this case, since it was originally filed, the Second Circuit is asking you for opinion in the next case. In this case, the Fifth Circuit has already given you some interpretation of a critical federal statute, 12 U.S.C. 1825b2. Let me pick up with the second point of error and with the question, Justice Cornyn, that you were just asking. The Fifth Circuit has settled the continued viability of the state tax lien in Irving Independent School District versus Packard Properties at 970 Federal Second. At 58. So we don't have a problem. The lien survives the foreclosure by the FDIC. I submit to you that as the attorney who argued for the taxing units, both the Matagorda and the Donna ISD cases, that the Fifth Circuit has interpreted the federal law in this issue, and I'm not going to ask this court to rule contrary to the Fifth Circuit on a point of federal law.
So we would have to, assuming this did meet an exception to the mootness doctrine, we would have to reverse the Court of Appeals on that basis.
I think that's the appropriate ruling, yes. I think because of the decisions in Matagorda and Donna, the disputed issue before this court on the merits about how to interpret 1825b2 has been decided by federal court, and that issue is moot. It is no longer in dispute.
I appreciate your candor. Can you explain how this meets an exception to the mootness doctrine in that it cannot be effectively reviewed on appeal if, in fact, the Fifth Circuit has twice ruled on this precise point. There's no danger that a court will not be able to decide this issue, is there?
With 20/20 hindsight, we can see that there is no danger. The problem Under the two recognized exceptions to the mootness doctrine that this court has previously noted, it doesn't fit. Of course, the Court of Appeals recognized a third one, the public interest exception, which the Austin Court of Civil Appeals had first recognized. To me, the question before this court is whether or not it recognizes that as a third exception to the mootness doctrine.
It has in common with the two recognized exceptions that the question of whether the issue can be effectively reviewed on appeal.
That's correct, and I think that the situation we have here is most similar to one that did not reach this court in Click versus Tyra at 867 Southwest 2nd 460, the 14th District in Houston, a no-writ case. There, the respondent was the district clerk of Harris County, who was apparently demanding additional cost deposits to be paid in full before she filed transcripts on appeal. And then when she was challenged through mandamus, she apparently would release the transcript and allow it to be filed. And to me, that's similar to the situation that we were confronted with here in that the ability to control whether this would remain a live controversy was uniquely in the hands of the FDIC. And as I said in my brief, and as I'll repeat here, I don't think they were consciously manipulating the situation. But as a practical matter, they could control and had sole control over whether or not they were going to foreclose their land. And we've always conceded once they foreclosed their land and became the owner that we couldn't take it away from the federal agency through our foreclosure. So through that vehicle, one party did have control over whether or not the controversy could continue. And we had, I think, about three cases enter the appellate pipeline and then get dismissed, typically on mootness grounds with no opposition, before we finally got the Matagorda and the Donna cases through. The other cases would get up on appeal, the property would sell or would be foreclosed, and either we or the FDIC would advise the court of the change in circumstances, and nobody made an issue at that point of mootness. And in part, I was doing that deliberately because I felt like sooner or later we would get to this stage, and I wanted to have a record of the fact that we'd had cases start and then get cut off. I don't think that either of the existing recognized mootness doctrines really fit this situation. As I said, I think the real question is whether or not you need to recognize the public interest exception, and I would question whether this is the case you ought to do it in, because really at this point neither the FDIC nor Nueces County care.
Well, to be blunt about it, since the time all this got started some time back, now the Fifth Circuit settled the legal issue.
And I guess what I'm saying is I would hate to see this court rule on whether or not it ought to recognize the public interest exception to the mootness doctrine in a situation where the two sides really aren't at first and really care about the result and are really arguing it. Because we're really not. I will take issue with the appellant, the petitioner, on one point of their first point of error, though. They phrased it in terms of that in publishing an opinion on the merits of a moot controversy, the Court of Appeals erred by rendering a prohibited advisory opinion. I think there's a distinction between an advisory opinion and a moot case. I think we're dealing with two different concepts here, and that the two of them should not be run together as is done in the point of error. I think you have a mootness situation when the controversy between the parties no longer exists. And I think mootness is basically a doctrine of judicial economy. Why waste a court's time deciding something that the parties no longer are fighting about? The advisory opinion principle, I think, goes back to a case this court decided in 1933, which is not cited in the briefs. It's Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, versus Corbin, 62 Southwest 2nd at 641. In that case, what the court did was reviewed a statute that allowed a district court to certify a question of law to a court of appeals, and the court of appeals could then certify the question to this court. And the Supreme Court took a hard look at that practice and said, wait a minute, we don't have anything but original jurisdiction in certain very limited cases and appellate jurisdiction. And what was happening in that case and what was happening in General Land Office versus Oxy USA was you basically had someone trying to get an appellate court to tell a trial court how it ought to rule on a question. And that's the context in which the no advisory opinion rule arose. And the only reason why the Second Circuit can send this court a question and ask for its instruction is because the Constitution was amended to specifically allow that. The certified question practice, as this court knows, within the state system no longer exists. It's probably because of Morrill versus Corbin. The advisory opinion doctrine is one of jurisdiction, that the court lacks jurisdiction. Mootness is not a jurisdictional issue. There's no question of mootness. It's a question that the controversy is over, therefore let's don't waste anybody's time. I think that this court can reverse this case on the grounds that it is moot and should because of Matagorda and Donna, but I don't think it should address it in terms of an advisory opinion.
Do you think dismissal would be the proper route because of mootness?
What I would ask the court to do is to defer several claims between Nueces County and Whitley Trucks from the claims between Nueces County and the FDIC, which I believe you can do under the rules cited in our brief. We need to keep our judgment final against Whitley Trucks.
Well, if that's not on appeal.
It's not on appeal.
Well, that this appeal, anything we write would not affect them at all. How would...
Unless the court simply dismissed the whole, wrote an order or a judgment or opinion that said that it was dismissing the whole case. I just want to preserve...
Just deal with the parties before us.
I'm sorry?
We just deal with the parties
just
before
us. Just deal with the parties before you and we're okay.
We can't affirm or reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals without deciding whether there is a public interest exception or mootness doctrine.
I don't know why you can't dismiss the appeal as moot based upon the Donna and Matagorda opinions.
Well, they're not binding. Because if the Court of Appeals is right, that there is another exception, then it was writing as it did.
Well, I think in this case, if the court is going to consider the public interest exception, that this is a case in which the public interest exception would apply and should be applied. There was some figures that I got from the FDIC's office in Dallas a while back show that between January 1, 1982 and November 19, 1993, which was the date of this report, there were 554 banks closed in Texas. There were probably an equal number of savings and loans closed during the same period of time. So we're probably looking at about 1,000 lending institutions that failed over an 11-year period. They failed because they became insolvent, because their liabilities exceeded their assets due to the drop in land values this board is familiar with. When those people quit paying on the notes to the bank, they also quit paying their delinquent taxes. And therefore, the problem was there, and it was going to be there for some time until the issue was addressed about who was right on the supremacy of the land inherited by the FDIC. It needed to be resolved. We were litigating this issue frequently with the FDIC because they had taken a position that was announced in their tax policy statement and in the memorandum in support of it, which is attached to their brief to the Court of Appeals. We were taking the opposite position, as we've argued in our brief before this court, and we needed to know when the time came to try to do a tax sale, whether it was going to be free and clear of the deed of trust land or subject to it. And that question has been decided. It needed to be decided so that the two levels of government could get on with business. I think that under those circumstances, it's appropriate for a court to consider the question in order to get it decided, and the governments can get on with the business of what they need to do.
But while you have gotten an answer to your substantive question from the Fifth Circuit, and now you care a whole lot less about whether there's another exception to the mootness doctrine, and you question whether it's advisable to address a question as important as that in a case where the parties are not harshly at odds over the issue, is there any way to avoid it in this case? Will we have to affirm or reverse the Court of Appeals or dismiss this application as moot? One way or another, there is a result on that issue.
Well, my feeling had been that this court should dismiss the application as moot.
In this court?
In this court.
But we've disagreed with the circuit before in FDIC cases before, and we've been sustained by the United States Supreme Court. I'm not understanding how we can say an issue is moot because of a Fifth Circuit as opposed to interpretation of a federal statute.
Get any explanation you've been paid?
Well,
that's the reason it's moot.
That point. But not because of Donna.
I argued those two cases over there, and I felt like the court considered the issues carefully. We argued it twice. Chief Judge Pollitt sat on both panels. I had panels that included Judges Garwood, King, and Higginbotham, all of whom are Texans. I personally feel like the result that was reached in those two opinions is something that both the FDIC and Texas local taxing units can live with. I think they reached a reasonable solution and a reasonable compromise, and that's why I'm not before this court asking for you to overturn.
But aren't you, as the litigant, the ones to structure agreement within this court that you can both live with and not ask us to when we have, the posture of the case?
We have been unable to agree. That's why we had to litigate it. Now that, and neither side has sought to appeal the Fifth Circuit opinions to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I believe the time for both, I know the time on the first one was running, I'm pretty sure the time on the second one was running. So we both seem to be satisfied with that result.
If you're agreed on this, why wasn't there a motion to dismiss the appeal, a joint motion?
The FDIC advised this court of the rulings of the Fifth Circuit, and I suppose that neither FDIC's counsel nor I perceived that there was a need to go any further after the court was made aware of those rulings on the merits of the case. And if we should have filed a motion to dismiss, a joint motion to dismiss, it was our error.
It's not too late. Well, we still have a Court of Appeals opinion out there creating a new exception to the mootness doctrine. It's,
it's the second Court of Appeals opinion creating an exception to the mootness doctrine. The first one was Austin.
Right. I agree.
Any other questions? Thank you.
I might just speak very briefly to the question of the appropriate disposition of the case. I think this case is moved. This court's settled precedent. It has to be vacated. I have difficulty seeing how the court can avoid some statement on the new exception, even though I don't think it applies here.
But it's moved because of payment, not
absolutely. Yes, not because of the Fifth. The Fifth Circuit is I think very highly persuasive authority for the position on the merits, but does not render the case moot. What renders the case moot is the foreclosure of the property and payment of the taxes. It falls well within the settled authority this court has laid down. The only question is what happens to the Whitley Court judgment, but I have to believe that this court has sufficient power under the Texas rules of procedure to protect that judgment in a case where that judgment was never brought into issue on appeal. But it seems to me that it is very important that this decision be extinguished. It's not only because we believe it's incorrect on the facts and on the law, but because it is moved under Texas law that we can't stand.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. Court will take another brief recess.
Audience, please rise.